This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon and welcome to Health and Living with me, Ti Xiao Yik. It's Friday, so it's the Doctor in House segment. Dr. George Lee, consultant urologist in the studio. How are you, Doc?
I'm very good. Xiao Yik, I can't believe it's Friday and yes. I have you.
Yes, our first show together.
Absolutely. All these years, finally, my wish has come true.
I've only been here a year and a half.
All those months, right? Months. Like, you know, obviously, for those of the listeners out there, you have no idea. Xiao Yik is the machinery behind all these, working hard, making sure the show goes well. And finally, I have the opportunity to be interviewed by her.
No, we have a team of producers all working together.
And then also, look at this. It's outside. It's not raining.
Yes.
Typical Friday. When, and Mira always thought I was the one who brought the rain.
I'm not going to say anything more on that. Today, actually, we're talking about anemia. Mm-hmm. So I just want to quote this finding from the Global Nutrition Report from last year. It says that Malaysia bears the triple burden of malnutrition. Now, we've always heard about the double burden, stunting and overweight, you know, two ends of that spectrum. But anemia is also part of the spectrum now. So today, we'll be honing in on that condition. And we'd like to find out why it's still so common among women in Malaysia. And what we can do about it, you know, addressing it and preventing it as well. So if you have any questions, we have a pharmacist, Jess Liu, in the studio with us. She represents the Malaysian Pharmaceutical Society Young Pharmacist Chapter. So if you have any questions for Jess or for George, you can call us at 03-7733-2900. You can also WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. Jess, good afternoon. Welcome to the show.
Yeah, we're good looking afternoon. Forward to
So, I was actually just curious to very briefly find out what does the Young Pharmacist Chapter of the MPS do?
So, the Young Pharmacist Chapter actually represents the younger population
younger,
of
pharmacists. I like that.
Yeah, the younger ones. Although we don't have a strict cutoff point.
Oh, so, it's not 40.
Goodness for that. Yeah. So, yes, I could, once you cross 40, you get discarded.
Yep. So in terms of the Young Pharmacist Chapter, the main objective is really to make sure that we elevate the awareness of the pharmacist profession, especially in Malaysia. So if you look into the MPS YPC Facebook page, we have around 9,000 followers, which has just achieved this milestone early this year.
Wow. Yep. Essentially, is the future of Malaysian pharmacists.
Yes, we certainly hope so.
Right, okay, fantastic.
Right, so getting down to the topic at hand, anemia. Could you define for us, actually, just to start off with, what is anemia?
So basically, anemia means that the hemoglobin level in the blood is lower than normal. So there are different cutoff points for different population. So over here, I would like everyone to remember three figures: 11, 12, and 13. Mm-hmm. So basically at different stages of life, one actually requires a different level of hemoglobin concentration in the blood. So for example, if one is pregnant, so the anemia cutoff point is actually 11 grams per deciliter, whereas for non-pregnant women is 12, but for men is 13.
Okay, so it's variable according to the gender. It's always quite variable because whether you're pregnant or not, right? Okay.
Yes.
I mean, Jess, presumably the reason why we have you on the show instead of hematologist is because it's such a prevalent condition that in the front line as pharmacist, you will get a huge number of populations presented to you first, and then therefore the important stance you play as far as dealing with people in the front line with anemia. Is that true?
Yes, actually, Dr. George, you are very true. There's actually one in three Malaysians actually have anemia. This is basing on data from three sources. We don't have a consolidated source.
Wow.
So what we know is in pregnant women, in elderly, and also in the survey that we did in our organization, the prevalence is consistent, it's one in three.
Right.
This is this is even higher than diabetes, which is one in five, which according to the 2015 National Health and Morbidity Survey.
Right.
But the sad part is not many people actually know that they have anemia. So symptoms such as tiredness, shortness of breath, fatigue, all these things might be just misinterpreted as a very long day at work.
Yeah, and because fatigue is non-specific.
Yeah, yeah.
And people would just turn up to pharmacies, for example, and wondering where they can get some tonics or something in order to help them.
I also think that a lot of us first find out that we may be, you know, we may have low hemoglobin levels because of these screening tests that are readily available at a lot of the community pharmacies. And that may be your first encounter with the possibility that you have iron deficiency or anemia, right?
Yeah, yes. Because some pharmacies might provide the services to send blood off for analysis, or the patients might present the blood results for you to interpret. Do you get that often?
Yes, actually, that's very true, because we actually conducted hemoglobin screening in around 22,000 patients throughout the 3 years period in independent pharmacies in Malaysia.
Wow.
So out of these 22,000 patients that actually got their hemoglobin tested, we found that around 29% of them, this is talking about normal public, lay person walking into the pharmacy, just get a random test.
These are elective screening,
yes.
Pickup population.
Yes, in independent pharmacies, mm-hmm. basing on our company's
and
own data.
29% had
a hemoglobin level lower than 12 for non-pregnant women and lower than 13 for men.
All right.
So this are non-pregnant population.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay. And does that automatically mean that they are anemic?
Well, this test is certainly indicative. So the advice that the pharmacist gave to them was that for them to consult a healthcare professional to get a full blood count tested in a hospital setting. And in order to find out the cause of anemia, one needs to go into further testing, like doing serum ferritin level. So, for example, for iron deficiency anemia, which attributes to around 50% of anemia worldwide, the main way of finding out is by finding out the iron storage in the body, which is the ferritin level. So that will tell us whether a patient have iron deficiency anemia.
I think that certainly will invite many questions, because what you highlighted is that perhaps a one-third of the population have no idea they've got anemia.
Yeah.
And then you are in the front line, and then sometimes they just come to you to buy supplement for iron because they just assume every single anemia are the same because it's just because of iron deficiency. Obviously, that's a wrong perception.
Mm.
Yes.
So what are the other types of anemia aside from iron deficiency?
Yep. Anemia can basically be caused by three main causes. The first one is nutritional deficiencies, which is iron deficiency anemia, falls under this category. Nutritional deficiency, such as vitamin B12 deficiency, can also cause anemia, which is another subtype of anemia called megaloblastic anemia.
Right.
The second type is infectious disease, or chronic or acute diseases. And the third type is genetic disorders, such as thalassemia.
Oh, right. Okay. Yeah. I mean, in the medical school, I was always, you know, hematology wasn't my strongest subject, but I always remember it this way. Mm-hmm. It's that as far as anemia is concerned, and then you either have too much blood loss, you have not enough blood being made, or too much blood destruction. Would that be a simple way for simple urologists like myself to understand anemia?
Yes, definitely true.
Yeah, okay. I mean, common things, because we are going to invite many, many questions, you know, about how to handle anemia and what sort of things. I mean, common things are, you know, Shavit mentioned earlier on that women face a lot of issues with anemia. Presumably something like heavy menses will be one of the easiest ways to detect whether you're losing too much blood through your monthly menstrual cycle. How common is that in the survey that you did?
Yep. So according to our survey, we did not look into that parameter, but data has already shown that two-thirds of iron deficiency anemia is mainly attributed to abnormal menstrual bleeding.
Mm.
So how do we define heavy menstrual bleeding? Typically, if you look at one cycle, you have more than 80 mils of blood per cycle. That would be defined as heavy menstrual bleeding.
Right.
But from a very pragmatic way,
yes.
one can actually look at whether they have to change their pad very often,
mm-hmm.
or they would need to look at their tampon if they use one. So these are the things that one should look out for, and also blood clot in the menstrual blood itself.
All right. So basically, those are menorrhagia that that one should look out for. Obviously, those are the easier things for women to monitor. But for men, what are the typical way they lose blood?
Well, if we talk about iron deficiency anemia, men obviously is not of the higher risk group.
Yes.
But for men per se, we see a lot of people nowadays going for endurance sports. So going for marathon, long distance you events, Ironman,
So all this kind of Ironman. Make it iron deficiency. Yeah. I mean, in medical schools, they always say that when men present with anemia, alarm bells will ring because the commonest reason why men would lose blood is through the bleeding from the colorectal organs. So common things, obviously, people say hemorrhoid is one of the commonest reasons and diverticulosis. However, whenever things happen like that in men, how concerned you are to advise them that maybe there may be colorectal cancer looming, because colorectal cancer is one of the biggest killers in malignancies amongst men and amongst women in a Malaysian setting.
Yes, Dr. Josh. So according to the American Family Physicians guidance, they actually have an algorithm on how to diagnose iron deficiency anemia. So if we look at men and or postmenopausal women, they should definitely rule out the cause of gastrointestinal bleeding. So usually they're advised to do a scope. If they have any initial signs of anemia, especially as indicated by the low hemoglobin level.
So if women comes to see you with menstrual issues, you would probably advise them to go and see a gynecologist. If men presented with anemia, would the first advice for you to ask them perhaps to do, let's say, cancer marker or fecal occult blood, or would you just say, just go and see physicians or gastroenterologists as your soonest convenience?
I think I will first ask the patient that comes in to me of what he understands of anemia first.
Right.
Yeah, so to just get a rough gauge of how or when does he think that he has anemia. So I won't go straight to recommending an iron supplement just yet.
Of course.
But rather to actually have a discussion with
the because to find the cause is paramount, the cause, really.
You need to treat the cause first.
Supplements is definitely something we need to go a lot into, because a lot of people might just resort to that as a quick fix, thinking that, you know, all you need to do is pop that pill. So we'll be finding out from Jess later, you know, what are the concerns? What do we need to take into account when we're looking at supplementation? We're talking about anemia today in our Doctor in the House segment. Dr. George Lee, consultant urologist in the studio, of course, as well as Jess Liu, a pharmacist from the Malaysian Pharmaceutical Society's Young Pharmacist Chapter. Remember, if you have any questions, call us at 0377332900, WhatsApp us at 0187898899, or tweet us at BFM Radio. We'll be right back after these messages on BFM 89.9. Good afternoon. Welcome back to Health and Living with me, T. Xiao Eek, doctor in house this Friday afternoon. We are talking about anemia today. Dr. George Lee, consultant urologist in the studio, along with Jess Liu, a pharmacist from the Malaysian Pharmaceutical Society, the Young Pharmacist Chapter. And we're really focusing more on sort of the community, you know, the frontline presentation of anemia, where Jess has said, you know, that as a community pharmacist, you know, they are the ones who sort of see patients or people coming in with any first indication that, you know, their hemoglobin levels might be low.
Like we highlighted earlier on, there are two ways that presentations of the public to healthcare profession. It's either in a form that they do screening blood tests and identify that their hemoglobin is not normal, or they present it with constitutional symptoms of fatigue and then subsequently identify having anemia.
Yes, that's right. We do have a caller on the line, Bae.
Hi, Bae. How can we help?
Good afternoon.
Hi, good afternoon, Bae.
My question is if a person is anemic, can he or she drink coffee?
Is there any concern that you have about coffee?
Yeah, because I think people in Malaysia likes to drink coffee. So, and if cannot drink, is it totally or can still drink with certain restrictions?
Good question. Okay, let's see whether we have the answer on that.
Thank you very much, B.
Jess, so you have your pharmacist and patients come to see you. Okay, my blood test didn't quite show that, you know, it's making the marks. Can I have coffee?
So if this patient is actually diagnosed with a subtype of iron deficiency anemia, then it would be an issue if the patient consumes coffee and take the iron supplements at the same time. Uh-huh. Because the coffee actually blocks the absorption of iron. So it's much recommended to not take it concurrently. So okay, the best to have it 1 to 2 hours apart.
Okay. And Bay had the question, say, can they have a little bit of reduced coffee, you know, second? So, okay, 1 or 2 hours apart, can the coffee, you know, how much coffee can she have?
Well, the recommended daily intake is around 1 cup per day.
Okay. But what in the coffee is the one that interferes with the absorption?
It's the caffeine.
The caffeine itself. Yep. So it's not just coffee, you know. Perhaps tea
as
and also
well.
Coca-Cola
actually,
or something.
Actually, dairy products as well.
Dairy product as well, which might interfere with the absorption. Yeah. Well, great question, Bae.
Does that also apply to iron-rich foods? So when I'm eating iron-rich foods like red meat, for example, do I have to watch out for concurrent coffee caffeine intake?
Yeah, it's best to have it not together with the main meal. Okay. So for example, if you want to take an iron-rich meal, then in order to have maximum iron absorption, you should take the dairy products such as cheese and so on and so forth as a separate meal. So maybe as a starter and later on before you proceed to the main course.
But so just now you said for the coffee and the supplements, 1 to 2 hours apart, would that be the same with a meal?
Well, of course, there's always a recommended intake method versus a feasibility of it. So sometimes, if possible, the recommendation according to the guidelines is to take it as a separate meal altogether. For example, if you want to have some dairy products, you should take it separate from the main meal.
All right, okay.
All right, we have another caller on the line, Yoska.
Yoska, good afternoon.
Yoska is calling all the way from Indonesia,
I believe.
Well,
clearly we've gone regional and almost global. Yoska, what's your question?
Yoska, can you hear us?
Okay,
we may have lost him, but
Yoska might be calling back.
Yes, please do call us back. Yep. So I think since we were on the issue of sort of what foods can inhibit the absorption of iron, maybe you could actually very quickly explain what are the foods that contain, there are rich sources of iron, some are highly absorbable and some are perhaps less absorbable as well. You could explain
that's
that.
A good question. I said this is always the midwife's kind of like advice, right? You know, because when you are doing your confinement with all these childbearing loss of blood, then you need to replenish with all your kidneys and heart so on and so forth. How much truth is there in such a supplement?
Supplement. In terms of dietary help.
Okay, so in terms of iron sources, when we talk about meat, red meat especially, such as beef, lamb, are all rich in iron sources, fish, poultry as well. So fun fact, I actually looked into a study done in Malaysia, looking into different food sources that is high in iron content.
Okay.
Dr. George, do you want to give educated guess?
Educated guess I can just think of will be spinach, right? That will be, that's not quite a Malaysian staple, but I would imagine.
Kangkong.
So actually, the highest is actually cockles.
Cockles?
Oh. Yeah, so per 100.
The siham.
Siham?
Yeah, siham. Cockles actually have 13.2 milligram of iron per 100 gram of cockles.
So our laksa is all right. Okay, what else?
So, and chickpeas actually. 6.9 milligram per 100
gram. Not too keen on that, yeah. But what next?
What next? Tofu? Are you a fan of bean curd?
Do I look like one? I'm definitely not.
Yeah, kangkong as well. It's not too bad. 5.2 milligram per 100 gram.
All right.
Anchovies as well.
Anchovies. Ikan bilis is all helping, right?
Yeah.
Okay. And what is a sort of recommendation to replenish? So if somebody asks you that, how much kangkong or how much ikan bilis do I need to replenish after childbirth, for example?
Mm.
But, well, you know, to give that to somebody who is in confinement doesn't seem right, because you probably get told off for too much anging or not enough anging, that sort of thing, right?
Mm.
Would you advise, postpartum women to take kangkong and ikan bilis and also tofu?
Mm. So usually the recommendation for postpartum women or pregnant women is usually through iron supplementation.
Right, yeah. Okay.
Because the iron needs for the women during pregnancy and post-pregnancy is higher. During pregnancy, because there's increased blood flow that needs to be channeled to the baby, which leads to depleting the iron stores in the mother's body.
Okay.
Hence, this iron supplementations together with folate supplementation actually is required during pregnancy.
Well, if we've got a caller.
I think Yoska is trying to call us back. So, Yoska.
Hi, Yoska.
Yoska? Hello, everyone.
Yes. Yoska, what is your question?
My question is, how about the anemia in children? So how can we diagnose them?
Okay.
And what supplement? It's also whether it's supplement is, or can be also freely given to the children, so anemia can be prevented by them.
Perfect question.
How Thank
to
you, Yoska.
You know, what is the typical cause of anemia in children? And then how are they diagnosed? And can we give supplement to them safely?
Mm. So when we talk about anemia in children, we also need to talk about pregnant women, because there's an interlinkage. So usually if a mother that had iron deficiency anemia during pregnancy, there's a higher risk of the child being preterm or having a low birth weight if the iron supplementation is not sufficient during pregnancy.
Okay.
Yep.
So you reckon mother not enough blood, children definitely not enough blood?
Yes. And when at the infant stage, especially during the breastfeeding stage, even though the breast milk contains iron, and it has shown that around 50% of the iron in the breast milk is transferable to the infant.
Okay.
But then mainly the iron source of an infant is from the infant's own iron store itself.
Okay.
Which is built up through the development months.
During pregnancy.
Do you know of any, obviously as a pharmacist, you don't get to see them too often. Do you know any of congenital conditions that children are born with anemia? And also how are they diagnosed, like what Yoska was asking?
There are genetical conditions such as thalassemia might lead to another subtype of anemia.
All right, okay. Yeah. And a supplement for children? Is that advisable? Because I'm going to ask you some questions about taking iron tablets, because these are not without its risk, right? And then, so obviously, let's talk about children first. As if mothers bring a child to pharmacies and say, look, I think my child is, a little bit pink, a bit pale, and then quite, let's give him some supplement. Also, would you advise children to take iron tablets?
I think the best way is to get the child diagnosed first. So just like what Dr. George has mentioned just now, usually this anemia in children also is usually hard to pick up, because like we mentioned, the signs and symptoms include like tiredness. If a child feels tired, maybe the parent might think that the child is down with the flu or having an infection or fever. But rarely, it might cross the mind that it's due to anemia. So even for a physician or a pharmacist, when we see a child coming into the pharmacy, fatigue, things like that, it might not be top of our mind
as
well.
Yes, I think the safest thing to do, just like for Yoska, regardless of the the diagnosis, how easy it is to make, I think better just to get a proper pediatric assessment.
Absolutely, yes. Before this, we were talking about iron supplementation, possibly for women who lose a lot of blood after childbirth. You know, who are the other groups who need to resort to iron supplementation? I mean, at what point could you sort of just increase your consumption of iron-rich foods? And at what point is that not enough and you would have to say, perhaps you need an iron supplement?
Mm-hmm.
Well, actually, according to WHO guidance, they actually have guidance according to the anemia prevalence in the country. So, for example, if the anemia prevalence is more than 20%, right, then it's recommended for the women that is at childbearing potential to actually have intermittent iron supplements during like each year. For example, the first quarter, for the first 3 months, they'll get iron supplements. After that, they'll stop for 3 months. Then after that, continue for another 3 months. So this is for countries that have anemia burden of more than 20%.
And for Malaysia, I mean, if you look at our, I think our National Health Morbidity Survey shows 34.7% among
overweight
women. 34.7% of anemia among women, that was in 2015. So do we fall under that above 20% category?
Yeah, so likely we will fall under that category as well.
So according to what you propose, is that if we fall into that category, it is advice for childbearing women to carry on taking iron supplement on a regular basis? Is that what you are suggesting?
Yeah, on an intermittent basis. Because if you look at our current day-to-day diet, so I actually did a brief conversion of the iron that we get from food. For example, if we want to get iron supplementation to prevent anemia every day, which is the recommended iron per day is 80 milligrams. But for example, a cup of beans per se only contains 5 milligrams of iron. It means that we need to take
three cups of beans
to get 15 milligrams of iron, which most of us cannot do so.
Mm.
So okay, it's not very practical in terms of...
A whole lot of cockles.
Yeah, a whole lot of cockles. Well, I find it very puzzling because if you get someone... because what you're describing is that you are targeting someone like Shaoik to convince her that, you know, we have this WHO recommendation that we cross that 20 mark and then you're the person who will most benefit. She's fit and healthy, and to convince her to pop a pill of iron tablets into her intermittently, how do you convince her? And then also, would there be any risk of her being overdosed with iron supplement?
Yeah, so actually, let's talk about then sort of what is the appropriate dosage when you're taking iron supplements and what are the risks of toxicity?
Yeah. Would you do it if someone just pointed out these statistics to you that this is our national health and morbidity data to show that we haven't crossed that line? You are statistically iron deficient. You should intermittently take iron tablets.
No, because I would want to be see that I am clinically iron deficient, and if my hemoglobin levels are
so
normal,
that contradicts what is recommended by the higher authorities. So you naughty girl, not following what the recommended guideline.
Okay,
is.
Don't listen to George.
She's not even convinced. How would you convince the general public?
So I think the first step, I think we are starting great here, at least to raise a bit on the awareness of iron deficiency anemia. So I think the word out there is if you have heavy menstrual bleeding, especially for young women out there, and you frequently feel like you're tired or fatigued or you have a shortness of breath, get yourself tested. And it's pretty
for your hemoglobin level.
Hemoglobin level, or you can go straight for a full blood count. Hemoglobin testing nowadays is quite convenient. There are point of care devices, means you just prick your finger, like how people prick their finger to get blood glucose level.
Right.
You can also do that for hemoglobin levels also. Then you have an indicator on what is your hemoglobin level like.
So let's use Shaoik as an example, right?
Do.
Okay, yes, which you know we have conveniently done so far. At what level would you start her in on intervention? Or when would you start her on supplement? What dose would you start her on?
Yeah, so if I'm not pregnant, my hemoglobin level should be 12 whatever the unit was, right?
Yeah. And how low do you think you should initiate? Would 11.9 be good enough reason to start her? And what dose would you advise her to do it? How long for? And what sort of risk would you advise her?
Yeah, so I think first, if it's borderline anemic, we'll try lifestyle intervention first to increase the food intake that is high in iron sources. And let's say if that doesn't work, I would advise you to go and see a doctor and get your blood test results out. Because sometimes we do not know what is the underlying cause of anemia. So just now we talked about gastrointestinal bleeding. It can also happen in women as well.
Mm-hmm. Define borderline anemia.
Just now we mentioned 11.9 gram per deciliter.
Okay, and up to what low, how low would you constitute, would that constitute a non-borderline?
Non-borderline. Well, I can go into the, from a standpoint of intervention, for example, if the hemoglobin levels go below 7, then a blood transfusion is needed.
Okay. Let's say Xiaoyi X1 is 9, and then you, let's say she had the diagnosis of iron deficiency anemia with a hematologist. How much iron should she be taking for how long, and what sort of the risk are you looking at? Because we have one SMS listener who SMS in and ask, iron supplement can cause constipation. Would you like to elaborate on that?
Yep. So the recommended intake to prevent anemia, not to treat, is around 30 to 60 milligram of elemental iron per day.
30 to 60 milligram of elemental iron per day.
So if you go into a pharmacy, before that, I will advise you to discuss with the pharmacist or your doctor first before starting the iron supplement. So you look at the bottle. So there are different types of iron preparations in oral form available in the market. We have ferrous fumarate, ferrous gluconate, ferrous sulfate. So different types of iron salts actually have different content of elemental iron. So when we talk about iron supplementations, it doesn't mean that the more you take, then the better it is. Mm-hmm. Because high levels of iron is actually also linked to gastrointestinal disturbances. So the patients might feel like gastric pain or pain in the stomach. Mm-hmm. That would then affect compliance as well.
Okay, I mean, constipation, is that a common phenomenon for people who takes regular iron tablets?
Yes, we usually advise the patient to drink more water.
Okay, all right. There is such a condition called iron toxicity, right? You can be overdosed with that, right?
Yes.
I believe it's something called Fanconi or something like that. Is that right? My brain has gone rusty a little bit at this age.
Hold on to that thought.
That's right.
We have to get to our advertiser's message, but iron toxicity, very, very important point. We'll get back to that after
Indeed.
The break. We're talking about anemia today with Dr. George Lee, of course, consultant urologist, and Jess Liu, pharmacist from the Malaysian Pharmaceutical Society. We'll be right back, BFM 89.9. Good afternoon and welcome back to Health and Living with me, T. Xiao Ik. Of course, Friday afternoon, that means that Dr. George Lee is in the house for...
And before the weekend.
Doctor in the house, yes, before the weekend comes around. We're talking about something quite serious, I think, anemia. And we have Jess Liu, pharmacist from the Malaysian Pharmaceutical Society in the studio. And we have been talking a lot about iron supplementation. And before the break, George, you mentioned toxicity.
Yeah, toxicity, yeah. I mean, obviously, we're living in a society where a lot of our patients and community quite like to try on supplements, or even worse still, probably go to Sincere first and that sort of thing. So when they come to pharmacists, in being in a community, in the front line, when they would like to rush that absorption of iron in order to recuperate their blood loss, if they take too much, would that be dangerous?
Yeah, our first advice would be for the patient to actually take the iron supplement according to the package insert. The package insert is the paper on the that comes along with the supplement that you buy, or usually is stated on the direction of use on the bottle itself. Mm-hmm. So as long as you follow the recommended intake basing on the package insert, then you are typically fine, because this is already a well-studied dosage. So should you require a higher dose of iron supplement, that should be recommended by your healthcare professional.
Mm-hmm. So when can somebody get toxic, like if they decided to be a bit overzealous with their ingestions?
Oh yes. So iron toxicity, we actually have a well-defined dose of if one take around 10 to 20 milligram per kilo body weight. So you need to times it with whatever body weight that you have, and that would be the threshold for iron toxicity in that particular individual. So there are symptoms of iron toxicity, such as nausea and vomiting, which is quite common in terms of most toxicity cases that we see. And if treatment is not said in a timely manner, it might lead to multi-organ damage.
Yeah, that can be quite life-threatening,
yes.
Isn't it? So
yes.
Therefore, you know, it's not a completely risk-free supplement for those of you out there who are thinking about just pop the pill and then get your red blood cells up.
And, you know, what is that duration of exposure to the overly high levels before you start to see the symptoms?
So it's usually quite acute. So if you consume copious amount of iron in one setting, like I mentioned, iron itself can cause irritation to your gastrointestinal tract. Mm. So the immediate symptom that you feel would be burning sensation in your stomach.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah. We have a question on WhatsApp. I'm not sure to what extent, Jess, you can address this. It's from Jay. Can you please advise about precautions for patients with paroxysmal nocturnal hemoglobinuria?
I must highlight that, you know, we have blank faces at the moment, but obviously one is a urologist, one is a, you know, pharmacist. I think we probably need to address that issues to a proper hematologist on one occasion.
Yes.
Yep. Thanks for that question, Jay.
Yes, Jay. So, you know, seek advice from your doctor. Okay. The best person is a hematologist.
Jess, I mean, obviously, we're looking at today's program in respect of somebody who you see on a regular basis. The other supplement that people are buying in order to replenish their iron, early on you talked about megaloblastic anemia. Quite a majority of these, from what I remember from medical school days, is that this is because of deficiency in certain requirement in the body, such as B12 and folic. And a lot of people take that before they get pregnant, and a lot of people say that to supplement their bodily blood function. Can you elaborate a little bit about the benefit of B12 and folic when people turn up to pharmacy and ask you whether this will be helping them to replenish their blood?
Yeah, so vitamin B12 and folate actually helps to build the red blood cells themselves. So in the situation where there's insufficient amount of vitamin B12, it will lead to a condition called macrocystic anemia.
Mm-hmm.
So when the B12 level is low, then it will affect the red blood cell's DNA synthesis, hence a lower red blood cell.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Yeah, okay. Right, that's good. I mean, we talked about, early on, we highlighted that anemia, effectively, it's blood loss because of either through your GI tract or through menses. And then we talked about pregnancy, when it's not making enough quickly enough, then B12 and folate will help. There are other medical conditions that can cause people to have severe anemia. Obviously, at the back of mind, the big C, cancer, sometimes can do that because they may be losing blood because of large spleen or large liver, or they might just be not making enough blood from the bone marrow. How worried are you when people turn up to the pharmacy with like constitutional symptoms, they feel fatigue? And then if sometimes you give advice about, doing blood tests, and then but yet the real issues are severe causes such as cancer. I mean, obviously, situation like that is very difficult as a pharmacist that you face this in the community. How do you handle that?
Yeah, I think when it comes to diseases, especially serious diseases, people are often in the denial state.
Mm-hmm.
They want to seek other treatments, other therapies in hope that it will help them. So if we talk about serious conditions such as cancer, if the patient already know that they have cancer, they should certainly go and see an oncologist rather than trying to seek alternative remedies outside the usual setting.
Yes. I think the concern here is when... Before they even have the
diagnosis.
Yes, so the blood loss is unknown. The causes for it is unknown. And
one of the manifestations of this serious condition is an anemia. Mm-hmm. And then when they come to see you in the front line, in the community, asking for advice, and then, you know, it's difficult to differentiate between what is serious and what is less serious. Yes. You know, I'm sure you face that challenge every day.
Yeah, I think if we want to define serious or less serious, it's really going back to the laboratory testing. Mm-hmm. So what's the hemoglobin level of the patient itself? So if we do symptoms assessment, actually we just did a roadshow in one of the higher institutions in Malaysia, and we did a hemoglobin testing in perfectly healthy young women and men in the university. Mm-hmm. And among those people that were tested, there were around 10% of them that have hemoglobin levels indicative of anemia. So it's really hard to tell. And when we ask those students, right, they will tell me that they don't have any symptoms that I mentioned. They feel perfectly fine. They don't feel tired. But if you ask them, you dig deeper, and when you observe to look at their face or their nails, you can see that they might be appearing more pale than usual people.
Yeah. So perhaps, you know, in cancer patient, they might your gut feelings that they might look ill and with cataptic kind of appearance. Okay. Mm. Interesting you mentioned about the blood test, because in the community, a lot of people now go to pharmacy and also to lab tests. Apart from full blood count, which you check the hemoglobin and also check the red blood cell, what other tests are you offering patients, and how do you interpret that results with the patients?
So in a pharmacy setting, we can actually do point of care hemoglobin testing, like I mentioned. It does not need a lot of time. So within 5 minutes, you already know your hemoglobin level. But in order to rule out the causes of the type of anemia, for example, if you want to know whether the patient have iron deficiency anemia, then we would need to look into the serum ferritin level, which is the iron storage in the body itself. So iron deficiency anemia is not something that happened overnight. Mm-hmm. So iron deficiency is actually a process. So the iron stores get depleted in the body, and ultimately the patient presents with iron deficiency anemia.
So you will check the ferritin, you will check the transferrin, and you'll check several other parameters to find out the cause. How comfortable are you to interpret these results, or do you think at some point the specialist needs to take over in order to analyze this? Because at the end of the day, perhaps they are, this is exactly what they do on a daily basis.
Yeah, I would be more confident to actually refer the patient to the specialist, because we want to rule out other causes as well. Just now we talked about gastrointestinal bleeding, we talked about cancer. All these things cannot be found out through an outpatient or a pharmacy setting.
Indeed. Mm.
So if we notice any red alerts or any alarm bells when we see the patient, we would require the patient to go and see a specialist even. Mm.
Just very quickly, a question on WhatsApp. Is Ganoderma a good iron supplement?
Mm-hmm.
I had to look this up. So Ganoderma is a type of fungi.
All right.
I think it may be known as Lingzi.
Lingzi. Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, there's always these
So these are
lotions,
sort of more like
Lingzi
herbal.
Is like a herbs. It's like mushrooms. That, I actually bought my mother that recently because somebody in a kind of like Chinese health food store told me that it was pretty good for her idiopathic thrombocytopenia. So you always get claims of ginseng and Donka Ali doing all these and that. But at the end of the day, it's so difficult to answer that question, isn't it? Because what actually has to undergo that robustness of randomized controlled trial, a lot of them don't really have that scientific basis.
Yeah. Another question from Daniel. I have been a blood donor before. However, I recently have low iron levels and I'm not allowed to donate blood. May I know why this is happening?
So that's an interesting set, you know, for can someone donate blood so often that they become iron deficient? And then, or, you know, sometimes when I take blood from patient, they kind of say, oi, doctor, you're taking too much, I'll become anemic. So how likely is that happening?
Well, first, we really need to find out what is the frequency of this donation, Daniel actually donating the blood. But 1 mL of blood loss is actually equivalent to 0.5 units of hemoglobin loss.
Okay, 1 mL.
Yeah, 1 mL of blood. So definitely...
1 mL is not a lot.
Yeah, so but then if you donate blood, it's much more than that.
I would assume that you donate blood, it's about like 450 mils or something. At least one unit, one packet of that is at least 400 mils, right? So how much would that equate to hemoglobin loss?
You're testing my meds now.
At the end of the day, are you looking at 2 units, 2 grams of blood loss there? You know, it's 400 mils.
And I think for Daniel, the concern is, you know, because he's not allowed to donate.
Yeah.
I would also think maybe part of the concern is how does he then sort of get it back up so that the levels are back to normal.
I totally agree. I mean, for Daniel, who is a regular blood donor, congratulations, well done. You know, obviously it's the spirit that actually helps many people. But on one hand, you need to find out whether it is too frequent donation that actually renders you anemic, or actually you have something else that is actually stopping you from donating. And I really think a visit to the specialist will be something that is extremely important.
Back to proper medical advice.
Yeah, and the red blood cell regeneration cycle is every 3 months. Mm-hmm. So if you donate the blood very frequently, within those 3 months, probably you're also not giving your body enough time to regenerate your red blood cells.
Well said. Okay.
We also have Belinda. With each chemo treatment for esophageal cancer, my brother's red and white blood cells are on the decline. How do we prop up his level through nutrition, food intake?
Yeah, well, on a physician's basis, let's talk about how that happens, because presumably the cancer itself can actually get rid of a lot of destroy a red blood cell. On the other hand, chemotherapy will suppress any form of blood regeneration, including red cell, white cell, and anemia. So if patients who is undergoing chemo or just recovered from a cancer treatment coming to the pharmacy and asking for supplement or dietary advice, how would you give them advice?
So I would be most comfortable to actually discuss with the oncologist managing the patient's condition first, because I would like to find out more on what type of cancer the patient have, what is the condition, and whether the oncologist actually prescribe any supplementations for the patient. Usually for these patients undergoing chemotherapies, they would have received certain supplementations as well. So also to find out whether the patient is already on any current supplements rather than just adding on blindly.
I think the other issue is that too much supplement may not necessarily be that good. I probably will just advise for balanced diet and also hydration, especially recovering from chemotherapy.
We do have a message here to offer some clarification. She says that 500 mils of blood loss reduces hemoglobin by 1 gram per deciliter.
Not 1 mL is causing hemoglobin to drop by 0.5.
Thank you so much for that.
I think I thought that might be a little bit too excessive. Yeah.
But anyway, we are rapidly running out of time. One last message, I think, which is a good note to sort of wrap up. You know, Jolene's asking, what are the red flags to look out for that you may be iron deficient?
Yeah, on the spirit of what we discussed today, is that on your survey, some people might dispute it to say way too high statistics of showing 1/3 of the general population, adult general population out there. But it is a significant number. It might range from 20 to 30%. For those people who come to see you with iron deficiency anemia or anemia, what are the red flags to look out for?
So definitely symptoms mentioned just now, such as tiredness, fatigue, shortness of breath, or general paleness. All these are the symptoms that one should look out for. And for menstruating individuals, I think it's very important to look out for whether you have heavy menstrual bleeding or not.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Well, I guess my take home is that with a serious condition like anemia, it might be a tip of the iceberg. You cannot take it lightly, even though it is easy just to go to community healthcare provider. However, the right thing to do is actually seek proper medical attention. And if at the end of all that investigation is nothing serious, obviously it's good. However, mm-hmm. if there is something more serious, that needs to be intervened earlier.
Thank you very much, Jess and George. We've been speaking to Dr. George Lee, consultant urologist, and Jess Liu from the Malaysian Pharmaceutical Society about anemia. You've been listening to The Bigger Picture on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.